Welcome to the Isaka Podcast. Isaka is celebrating its 50th anniversary in 2019, and on our 50th Anniversary Series podcast, we're discussing some of the big picture themes that have impacted Isaka's professional community over the past 50 years, and that will continue to in the future. Today, we're joined by Ashley Holmes, Governance and Compliance Manager at Delta Airlines. Ashley also brings extensive experience working in the financial sector, and today we're going to talk about some of the major technological shifts in fintech. Ashley, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
Can you start out by giving our listeners a little background on the work that you've done in the financial sector?
Sure. So I started out in consulting and with a high emphasis on banks, and more specifically, FFIEC internal audit, assisted my clients with the internal audit in regards to FFIEC requirements. I spent maybe 4-5 years in consulting, and then I moved on to Centrus Bank that's located here in Atlanta. And I did, I held several different hats while at Centrus. But at one point, when I first started, I was responsible for our third-party security assessment team and activities, anything related to a third or fourth party providing a service or sharing data. From that perspective, our team was responsible for assessing them from a security perspective. I was also responsible for standing up independent audit requirements as related to SOC reporting. I also had a hand in managing issues, anything related to our information security policy or any other standards or policies that we might need to document issues for from a governance and compliance perspective. So at a high level, essentially what I was responsible for, and I guess where I've kind of, my expertise has kind of been leveled in.
This is an Isaka 50th Anniversary Series podcast. So in that spirit, can you provide a brief overview of a few of the major technology-driven shifts that have impacted the financial sector in recent decades?
Sure. I think there's a couple of popular ones that most people have probably heard about. I think maybe the most popular one that people might be familiar with is, I guess, the term a sharing economy. I think even in the last decade, the Ubers and the Airbnbs and the Verbos, I think it's called Lending Club, the sharing economy mindset of, you know, leveraging existing technology platforms and other services to lighten the load of a balance sheet for a company. For example, you know, Uber, they don't own any vehicles, so they don't have to worry about maintaining a fleet of inventory and maintenance and things like that, but they leverage their employees' vehicles as assets to help lower their costs and things of that nature. So I would say from the banking perspective, that would be something that, you know, who would have thought 10 years ago would have been something that would be a technology that we would be beginning to leverage or integrate into our infrastructures. I think there's another technology that I think has been quite a game changer for banks of all sizes is data aggregation. The ability, with all the APIs that we now have between the Yodlees and the Plaids and the Mint.coms of the world, to be able to provide that personalized view for each of our clients, to pull in multiple bank accounts or bank accounts from other financial institutions and give them that one consolidated view of their personal assets and help them manage their assets well. And also, you know, from the bank's perspective of making money is upselling or cross-selling products and services to clients based on empowering your clients to have a better handle on what their assets and their personal wealth is like.
What stands out to you about how mobile payments have changed the customer experience?
I think just as any other disruptive technology, if you think about PayPal and I guess Venmo, they've been around for a long time, at least PayPal anyways. But banks being so heavily regulated, they couldn't necessarily sign on to use PayPal service. And then along comes, just within the last year or two, a product called Zelle, Z-E-L-L-E, that's a specific add-on or module that can be incorporated into a financial institution's online banking platform, which can allow the same functionality as a PayPal or a Venmo, but it, from a compliance perspective and regulatory perspective, it's kosher, I guess, for banks to adopt. So PayPal, again, you know, they've been around at least for a decade or longer, but banks are just now getting a version that's appropriate for the industry just a year or two ago. So I think about those peer-to-peer payment type of technologies, and Zelle is the front runner. And I'm not, I don't work for Zelle. I don't promote Zelle, but it just happens to be the number one player in this space and the one that I'm most familiar with anyways. But I think that's been a real game changer for banks being able to adopt that peer-to-peer payment technology.
As you network with colleagues in the financial sector, from a technology perspective, what are some of the other main innovations that people are most excited about going forward?
Going back to the data aggregation, the furthering of what a lot of people are talking about, open banking, quote unquote, open banking platforms. I think a lot of people are just really excited to see where artificial intelligence and machine learning can continue to grow. You know, I guess we kind of started out smaller with, I think what they're officially called is a digital personal assistant or a chat bot. You know, if you go to your bank's website, if you stay there long enough, maybe 30 seconds to a minute, you might receive a chat box pop up like, how may I assist you? That's part of the AI or the artificial intelligence. And that's been around for a while. But I think further integrating and expanding on that is really exciting. Everyone's looking for a personal customer experience. And the more that we can integrate with artificial intelligence and machine learning and bots, you know, the higher the expectation for that personal or contextual and predictive services that we can provide to customers. It's all about tracking user behaviors and giving them personalized tips and insights on how to save money or how to better manage their expenses. And the expansion of AI and machine learning, the data aggregation is really neat too. There's obviously security risk with data aggregators that need to be hashed out, but I think that's going to take you to the next step of getting that personalized or user-specific predictive services that you can offer your clients.
You just touched on security risks when it comes to data aggregators, and that leads me right into what I wanted to get into next. From a security standpoint, what are some of your other biggest concerns on the fintech front?
Well, the hard part is all of this technology, it's really fascinating and it's fun. And unfortunately, fun always comes with a cost, especially in the financial services industry. We've had the EU come out with GDPR a year or two ago, which is proving to be quite a significant undertaking, even for larger banks, to kind of get their grasp on all the regulatory requirements around that. So if you think about all these fintech firms who are probably much smaller in workforce and not necessarily having superior deep pockets, I think regulations are going to be really hard for fintech firms to meet just from the perspective of cost and needing resources to actually take on that burden of compliance. You know, that's just from a compliance perspective, but from the cybersecurity perspective, you know, this is new territory, and not a lot of times regulatory requirements are up to snuff based on what would be an industry best practice that is more agile and flexible and being updated. So again, you're talking about more time, more money, more resources to put towards hardening these technologies and securing data. It all comes down to how much money do you have to allocate towards these particular items. So far we've talked about regulations and cybersecurity, and I think if there's a final one at the top of my head, it would be, I think there's still a need for the human touch or the human factor. I think you can't necessarily 100% replace that human touch. There's still some clients who would prefer, you know, to talk one-on-one to someone else or walk into a branch and talk to an advisor. Your older clientele that, you know, they really just don't want to do anything on a computer or on their phone. And they feel their needs and their experience is best, you know, one-on-one in person or, you know, maybe even over the phone. So I think the challenge is going to be finding that balance of what's going to be easiest for and most convenient for the majority of your client base, but then still offering, you know, a level of service and support for your other clientele that may not fit in that majority.
Given that security and risk management are especially important in the financial sector with so much sensitive data involved, do you think that boards of directors and executives are giving those areas the appropriate amount of attention and resources?
I believe so. I think it's maybe now that was the comment, I guess, or the way you worded that is probably the thought of a few years ago, getting your board or whoever your executive leadership team is on board with allocating resources to cybersecurity or information security. And I don't really think that's necessarily the issue these days. I feel like they have a higher IQ in cybersecurity. They realize how little effort that it takes for a breach to occur. You know, I always say that we're in a tough industry because we have to be right 100% of the time, and a malicious actor only has to be right once, and then they take everything you have, and the media is chaos. It's the all around just bad situation. But I feel like it's not necessarily the board being aware. It's just more of, okay, well, we're going to allocate these dollars towards protecting our data and protecting our clients and our environment and our assets. But how do we do that? What's the best way to do that? And so taking it to the execution step, I think, is where some banks are struggling more so than others. Obviously, the larger banks like Bank of America or Chase, you know, they obviously have a significant amount of resources, people and money to be able to execute on some of these highly intricate projects, you know, to better harden their environment and systems. Whereas a smaller bank, a Regions or, you know, even a SunTrust, is they have the dollars, but it's also finding the talent pool that can help drive or execute on this new vision or this new project or set of projects, I guess. So that's where I see the nuance to your question is they're aware, they know there's an issue, they know they need to focus on this, and they're allocating dollars, but you know, what does the execution of that look like? And then are they actually executing well on the project plans that they're reviewing?
As we look further into the future, blockchain is certainly one technology that is receiving a lot of attention. But what do you expect to be the most prominent trends in the financial space in the new decade as we arrive in the 2020s?
I think some of the technologies that I've already mentioned about artificial intelligence and machine learning, data aggregation, the big data piece, the sharing economy, I think those are four or five of, you know, the technologies that we are just now starting to adopt in the financial services industry. And I feel like within the next 5 years or so, we'll probably perfect the use of that, meaning that, yes, the technology is here today, but I don't feel like banks or other financial services companies are taking advantage of its full capabilities yet. So I think in the next 5 years or so, we're going to kind of see that perfected and those implemented probably true to form versus where we're kind of seeing it in its infancy now. And then, you know, there's always earth-shattering ideas. I was talking to someone at a conference recently who is a federal regulator, and we were talking about how Amazon wants to be a bank. They want to have their own bank. And that's just so crazy to think that Amazon could potentially be a financial institution in and of itself with their own checking accounts and things like that. So there's some things I think as far as regulatory walls or barriers that could potentially open up to allow some of those things like Amazon wanting to have its own bank. Those are some things that just I think people aren't really thinking about or think that could ever happen. So I think we'll see those maybe within the next 5 to 10 years, the traditional brick and mortar branches and things like that slowly phasing out and going more to a digital front. I think it'll take at least another decade or so to kind of see that moving in that direction.
Ashley, thank you so much for sharing your insights with the ISACA podcast audience today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
That is our program for today. For more on Isaka's 50th anniversary, visit www.isaka50.org.